Welcome to Lawyer v. Lawyer, the only legal podcast giving you both sides of the trial room floor. Attorney Gary Berger represents injured people and their families, while Attorney Debbie Champion helps people and companies protect themselves against injury claims. Together, they have over 50 years of trial experience. This is Lawyer v. Lawyer.
Hey, welcome to the Business Inside Out Show special edition. This edition of the show is about lawyers and getting our perspective of lawyers, getting their opinion on a variety of topics, one, to humanize it, and two, to get a point of view, because we lose it when we don't realize they're not our enemies, they're our friends, and their job is to work through the maze of legal and help us. So I want to introduce our guest today. We have Debbie Champion, a prominent attorney, is a founding partner in the firm of Reinerson, I hope I say it right, Swiss, she'll correct me later, Schnurbusch and Champion, one of the 25 largest law firms in Missouri. Ms. Champion actively practices in Missouri and Southern Illinois state and federal courts. Ms. Champion has been named to the top 50 attorneys in St. Louis and the top 100 attorneys in Missouri. She's been honored by the St. Louis Small Business Magazine as Wonder Woman and by the St. Louis Business Journal as one of the top 25 most influential businesswomen in St. Louis. We also have on the podium today Gary Berger, who devotes his practice to helping injury victims and their families, providing financial recovery and protecting the future of those injured and making our community safer through advocacy and volunteer work. Gary Berger has tried and won many complex civil litigation cases in many areas, medical malpractice, products liability, employment discrimination, auto crashes, motorcycle and truck cases, premises liability, class actions, and consumer fraud. He also pursues and tries cases in commercial litigation, probate workers' compensation, and administrative and arbitration hearings. Gary is an experienced St. Louis trial attorney and has been ranked an AV preeminent rated lawyer by LexisNexis and Martindale Hubbell, the preeminent rating system indicating the highest level of legal ability and ethics, the pinnacle of professional experience. Debbie and Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. We're happy to be here, Dr. Fine, and I know that I'll revert to calling you Stan occasionally because we go back a long way.
Yeah, it took me a long time to get a PhD, but in your case, I'm going to forgive it. Just call me Stan. How's that? Among friends, that's fine. You know. Anyway, let's get started. I got a lot of great stuff to talk with you about. Are lawyers as mean to each other as TV and movies portray them to be?
Gary, why don't you start with that one?
Sure. Hey, Stan, thanks so much for having us on. Yes and no. You know, I hate to not give you a yes or no, but I mean, look, you know, in litigation, it's an advocacy system. We're fighting each other to get the best result. But lawyers also, after you vigorously argue the merits of a position, you walk out and you shake hands and you cut deals and try to be efficient in the litigation process. We don't take it personally. We don't make personal attacks on each other. Most lawyers, we keep it professional. We understand that, you know, hey, you may have good facts in this case, but the next case you may be needing the favor. So lawyers like me and Debbie, and you know, Debbie's as you mentioned in the intro, is a well-regarded defense lawyer. I'm a plaintiff's lawyer. She and I do a podcast together called Lawyer v. Lawyer, where we talk about our commonality and common ground. As we've had a year of politics and stuff where folks sometimes focus on what divides us, and sometimes lawyers like Debbie and I try to focus on what unites us, and that's what a lot of lawyers do. I have good relationships with most defense lawyers, and Because at the end of the day, they're going to be pros. They're going to advocate their position. They're going to try to beat me legally. But at the end of the day, you know, we have a beer or a coffee or get on a Zoom now because we don't see each other, you know, whatever it is. So that's sure. kind of my two cents on it.
How about you, Debbie?
Yeah, I agree with Gary. You know what's hard, Stan, in the legal field, and it's hard when you first start out, and most people learn to get past it, but some never do, and that is when you have a client, you listen to your client, you believe what your client says, and that client will often paint the other person as the devil incarnate, and you believe it.
Right.
And then as you get more experience, you realize, oh, gosh, you know what? There are two sides to every story. I think I've got the best side, but there are always two sides, and it's not always, you know, an angel versus the devil. It's always – it's just two people who have a dispute about something, and you have to try to really set aside your client's personal feelings, which sometimes you take on, and be objective to try to follow what the law requires us to do. And our mistakes come and the fights come when we have a difficult time doing that. And I think it's not an intentional thing like is sometimes shown on TV, but it is just the emotions of the case or the claim taken over.
Well, I was reading Yahoo News. They're my go-to when I want to get a quick snapshot of news. And I wanted both your opinions on this, and then I'll Gary expand to the question also. When we talk about problems of lawyers being ethical and the rules of evidence, with Trump right now, the big banner today was license to practice law is not a license to lie. Petition. More than 1,000 attorneys, retired judges, and law professors have signed an open letter calling on Bar Association to investigate the Trump attorney's conduct. I think it's very dangerous. So what's going on with that, and what's your opinion on this whole thing of ethical and rules of evidence?
Debbie, you want to start this one out, my friend?
I will start it out. I have not seen that article. I will tell you that Gary mentioned that we do a podcast, and we just finished a podcast kind of talking about this and talking about the difficulty of how hard it is when somebody gets in the public and gets in the press and uses the media to assert an agenda, and that's not just what's going on now, but in any situation, when they talk about things that are argument or just, you know, speculation, and then you get in, and then you compare that to what happens in the courthouse where the judges require evidence. And sometimes there's a huge difference between the first thing when you're talking about your case and you're puffing up your case and making it better than it is. And then you get into court and you fail to produce any actual evidence. There are rules in the law that require actual evidence to prove a claim. And many times, and again, not just this scenario, but over and over and over again, you see people saying that something is fact, but there's no evidence of that fact. And so we talked about that, and Gary brought up something that I've really thought about since then. And Gary, I don't want to take your steam away, but Gary,
you are that. This is a brilliant trick, Stan. She's taking my steam away while she's telling me she's not. Sorry, Debbie. Go ahead.
He brought up the fact that, and it's brilliant. We have these rules of evidence for a reason, and that is because this happened before, and people, you know, you have to have rules that people follow. So I haven't seen this, but of course, my belief is that you should, at least as far as you know it, in any circumstance, tell only the truth. But I'm in the larger picture, and again, I'm trying not to be political, but in the larger picture today, when we see states suing states and people trying to modify what I think has been done, and I'm much more concerned, or I'm concerned, my concern right now coming to this call is how we look to the rest of the world. Gary, how about
right.
you?
Yeah, it's a great question, Stan, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this. You know, as lawyers, we fight the reputation of our profession all the time, and it's, you know, a few bad apples ruin the whole bunch, et cetera, et cetera. It's really important to be truthful. I teach my kids to tell the truth. It's an old idea. The reason behind that petition is that as lawyers, we're sworn to take oaths. We have rules of ethics. We have rules of evidence. There's a whole body, without getting in the weeds too deep and boring your listeners, mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of stuff out there with trying to have candor towards the tribunal and the fact finder. That's literally in my oaths and the things that I have to do to be a lawyer. So there's hundreds of years old, coming from England in the 250 years history of our country, and then before our Constitution. There's these rules about hearsay. You can't just say something in court. You got to have the person who saw it has to say it. You can't just put any document into evidence. It has to be authentic. You can't just get up and say a bunch of stuff without being held to task to have that proven as evidence. You know, so that's why we have these evidence rules. Sometimes after, you know, we read in the media, you know, after a trial, the jury gets a little mad because they didn't hear this piece of evidence or that piece of evidence. But there's rules so that when we put stuff in front of a court and judges rely on this stuff, that they know they're relying on accurate stuff. Now, the line has been smudged on what's real and what's fake in news and in law and everywhere else in our society. I don't want to get too political or philosophical here, as Debbie mentioned, but rest assured that lawyers in the trenches like Debbie and I, who do this every day, and I think between Debbie and I, we got 70 or 80 years of doing this, is that most lawyers do the truth every day, and they don't put in documents or evidence or affidavits that they know are false. We just don't do it because it's going to hurt you, and it's not true, and it's not fair. It's not the right thing to do.
Well, I think the thing, just as a snippet here, my emotions have been very fragile with this. I keep wondering, where's my savior, being a Christian, but also where's my savior of America? I've been led. I've been in the military. I've paid my taxes. I'm 77, so I've been around a while. And I want my country to take care of me. I took care of my country. I want my country to take care of me. And it's very frustrating as a layperson when day after day lawsuit. Not to pick on them. It's gonna play out. And I feel like it's got to play out, no matter that nobody will ever be able to say at the end of the day, it didn't have every chance. But there comes a point in our society where we feel pretty beat up when we see things like this. You drop one lawsuit and they rush for another. I'm really glad that the consortium of attorneys and judges and professors are pulling together. Hooray for them. Hooray for them to defend the legal system and attorneys. And I do hope they can get the bad taste in America's mouth about when in doubt, sue, you know? And I think that's just terrific. But I appreciate both of you taking, you know, the position you did. So let's get on. So what is the best advice you have for a potential client who's getting ready to get in some sort of litigation? Either one of you can start this. It's up to you.
Deb, you want me to start with this one? Well, I will.
Okay.
So when you're contemplating litigation, look, they say 99% of cases settle. So what I tell my clients, what doesn't matter on the area is you want to, as a business owner, you want to know that you're going to have to pay a lot of money and costs and expenses, pay lawyers to fight that fight. So you want to get a smart solution. You want to get a business solution to your problems. Can you avail yourself of the court to resolve a dispute? Absolutely. Is it sometimes smart to file a suit and litigate it so you up the price and you get the best deal you can on whatever the dispute is? Absolutely. You know, just like anything else. And I'm not saying people should run and sue in any way, but if you have a recalcitrant defendant who's not paying enough on a on a breach of contract case, or if you got injured, I do a lot of injury work. If you got injured and the insurance company, you know, you have a major injury and it's life changing, and the insurance company isn't even returning your calls, you don't got a choice. And that's one of the brilliant things about our America. It's one of the, you know, one of the reasons why I'm so proud to be an American and why we're in such a great country. And you mentioned before about serving your country, Stan, and you basically paying your dues into this system. The good news is the silver lining of what you kind of mentioned before too is we do have a system in America. We have systems in place to make sure that when you have aberrant leaders or lawyers that try to do this stuff, that our system controls it. And we've seen that in the judicial rejection of some of these claims. Similar to get to your question is, too, is, and this is all tied together in a kind of a philosophical way, is, you know, we have systems in place so that the little guy can't get pushed around by the billion-dollar corporation or insurance company. But at the same time, if you are, let's say someone sues you for rear-ending them or sues you, you also have the right to a defense, and you get to call the accurate facts out. So what I tell clients, to get back to, in a nutshell, to answer your question, is step back. You know, like when you write that mean email to wait a day type of thing before you send it, or that stuff. Can you press that thing? Yes, but step back. Do it. Talk to a lawyer. You know, pick up the phone, talk to lawyers. I answer questions for free at my firm all the time, and we'll sit there and say, well, did you try to resolve that? No, I didn't. Tell you what, before you pay me a bunch of money, go see if you can handle it yourself. If you can't, you need me, great. But I don't want to take your money, and I don't want to waste your time, because one of the things that good lawyers want, believe it or not, is to have efficient resolution of problems. So nothing bothers me more, Stan, than a case that could settle today for X amount, and instead I'm litigating it for 6 months, taking a bunch of depots, doing all this stuff, and it settles for the same price 6 months later. It really bugs me. So, you know, like anything in life, you want efficient resolution of this stuff so we can get on to the things that matter in life.
Amen. Debbie, how about you?
So it depends, Stan, on who my client is. I do, as Gary mentioned, he does mostly plaintiff's work. That means the decision to bring the suit. And I do mostly defense work, which means most of my clients, or a lot of my clients who choose to take on the risk of insuring people or owning a big company or owning a business, then, you know, to some extent they are a little bit more veteran as far as being in lawsuits and defending lawsuits. So generally when you're defending, there's not a lot you are going to talk to your client about with respect to getting into the litigation, but there's a lot you're going to talk to your client about during the litigation about getting rid of it. But I also do a lot of work where I'm bringing the lawsuit, and that could be for plaintiffs who are injured. It could be for companies, a lot of company claims where one company is suing another, and so my client has to make that decision. And I learned early on, one of my supervisors said to me, you know, there's a certain percentage of people out there who file suits and who will take it to the end but who will never show up to court. And I've always wondered, why is that? Because it is true. There's a certain number of people, you go through a case, and the day before, they walk away, and you never see the case again. And it's very odd. And I think what has happened with that is people don't understand or realize, when they get involved in litigation on either side, the emotional and physical toll that a lawsuit can cause because of the stress of the lawsuit. And that also time, their time in dealing with this and thinking about it is worth a lot of money. And so whether you're a plaintiff or a defendant, you've got to realize every, you know, like Gary said, if you can't end it efficiently, if you can't be one of the 90-plus percent that settles beforehand, do you have the bandwidth to go through this? And it's not the courage, because people always want to be competitive and think they have the courage. It's not the courage. The question to the client is, are you willing to give up everything that it's going to take you to get this through trial? Not just money, but the emotional toll that this is going to take on you and your family, or you and your business. And so that's what I talk to them about generally.
I want to add a kudo to that. I had a divorce attorney that was probably one of the top ones, and it took us a lot of money, a lot of emotion, a lot of faxing, a lot of everything. At the end, I know I got better than I would have if I hadn't had this person. So in defense of attorneys, they are your guardians in my mind. An audience, today we're kind of debunking or demystifying attorneys for you. So that's the purpose of having two big guns in here. All right, so let's go on. So in addition to being lawyers, you also own businesses. But do lawyers have people to go to learn to run a business? And how does one learn the art of business when you're practicing law full-time? Interesting question. Let's start with Gary this time. Gary, what's your take? Then we'll do Debbie.
This is a great question, Stan. Lawyers, we get out of law school and we think that we're just going to be these brilliant lawyers and all this business is going to come to you. The reality is you got to get off your high horse and get in there and run a business, just like everybody else who runs small businesses. I run a small business. We got 10 to 15 people who are always working. And so I got to run a business. So I always say I have three jobs. I'm a trial lawyer. I have to market my business and get business, and I have to run my firm. And it's those last two, marketing and running a firm, that I have to do. And I've trained myself to go do it, and I didn't do it. Sometimes lawyers and people just throw money at marketing or pay someone to do it. But until I like the idea of surrender and surrendering to, you know what, you got to run a business, you got to get business, you got to, you know, I have to, you know, I got to get payroll out, I got to make money, I have to manage my employees. There's a whole thing, and I'm not above it. Like, and no one's above it. You know, I'm like everybody else who runs a restaurant or has a manufacturing plant or any other business. I happen to be in the law business, so that's a big deal. Now, how do I learn about it? I read books. I listen to some podcasts. I'm members of groups where we sit and share this stuff. I'm part of some mastermind stuff. It was very, very tough for me, Stan. I wanted to be